Welcome to From the Heart with Daryl Underwood, pastor of Servants Heart Chapel in Clovis, New Mexico. We hope you are blessed and encouraged by this week's sermon. Now here's Pastor Daryl.
Psalms chapter 103 is one verse that I'm going to read for you. Psalms 103, verse 14 says, "For he," God, "knows what we are made of, remembering that we are dust." He knows we're dust. He knows, which that word can also be translated into clay. We're made of clay. We're weak. There's this obviously significant, one thing that's going to mark this point in time for American society is everyone's love for superhero movies. I say, oh, back then, yeah, that everybody was into superheroes. That was all, you know, this being superhuman, being strong enough to withstand anything that any normal person can throw at you. And really, I can only speak for myself. You know, I've always wanted to live my life as if I were superhuman, as if I were Superman. I could handle anything physically. I could handle anything mentally. And the reality is very different. I am not superhuman. I do have limitations. And there have been certain points in my life that have marked that. We could even call them mortal memorials, points in time that reminded me of how very human I was. One significant point, 17 years old, spring of 1992, when I realized that I really did not want to be in charge of my own life, that I was not very good at doing that. I needed God to lead me. And then 20 years later, in 2012, pastoring a church in Florida, young pastor, my first pastorate, very challenging situation. And it wore me out after a few months. I was wore out. And I realized I'd been trying to pastor and lead completely by my own strength and my own power, my own abilities as a speaker and communicator and negotiator sometimes. And that doesn't work very well. That was insufficient. I needed God in my ministry. Interestingly enough, about a week after I realized that, that's when I got orders for here. It was, I always believed that God was training me, putting me through some stuff, so I would know what I needed to know before Missy and I came out here to minister. And then there's 2014. I was very much a bivocational pastor, still active duty in the Air Force. I took on an additional duty, which turned into a whole nother job. So I was doing two full-time jobs for the Air Force plus pastoring a church, and I was at my limit. And then the tipping point came with a new superintendent. It was a younger girl who was on the fast track for making chief, and we were both the same rank, but they were grooming her to eventually become a chief master sergeant. So they put her in the superintendent position, which I was fine with. What I wasn't fine with was the way she treated me every day. Most days it was very miserable. She would flip from sharing very personal information with me, like we were buddies, close friends, to making my life absolutely miserable. And I got to a point where I realized I feel like I'm going to break. I have my limitations, and God helped me figure some things out and make some adjustments in my life to where that didn't happen And I see, I'm reminded about our frailty as humans constantly, every day. Looking on Facebook, just today, a lady that Missy and I know, Sister Davis, she's been battling illnesses, and she had surgery recently, and they recently found out that that surgery was unsuccessful. So they don't know what's going to happen with her. My mother has been dealing with physical illnesses for many years. And my own father, who is acting as caregiver to her, which is a huge job in and of itself, was also working full time and dealing with the stresses of that. He's feeling my mother's feeling her limitations because of the physical battles and the pain she suffers. My dad's feeling his physical limitations and mental limitations, just trying to take care of what needs to be taken care of. We are but clay. I was talking with Mike, who hasn't been here for a while, a long while, right? And I was sitting down with him, and he was telling me all the challenges that he's facing, just tremendous personal challenges, family challenges, and work challenges. By the way, if you got your GED, you have your GED?
I'm working with it. I'm missing some of my English work.
Okay. If you can get that finished, they're desperate for firefighters. You do. So he's telling all these challenges he's facing. As he's telling me all these pressures he's feeling, I remember a scripture, and I read the scripture to him, what I'm about to read to you, and he said, well, I think you've got Sunday sermon. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. In 2 Corinthians, and I'm just going to read through it. I'm not going to put it up on the screen. You just listen to it. There's some very profound truths here, very simple truths. I want you just to try to internalize these concepts into your own life and what it means to you. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning with verse 7, it says, now we have this treasure in clay jars. The clay jars being us, talking about there's a treasure that we have as Christians. And he goes on, so that this extraordinary power may be from God and not from us. What power is he talking about? So at first, there's this power. My question is, what power is he talking about? And then the second concept is, okay, now we know that we're weak for a reason, is to help us realize our dependence upon God. We need his help. We cannot be our own gods. Verse 8, we are pressured in every way, but not crushed. We're feeling pressure, yet we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but not in despair. We're persecuted, but not abandoned. We're struck down, but not destroyed. Now, let me point out that is because they're not crushed, they're not in despair, they're not in abandoned, they're not destroyed, because God is with them. We're pressured in every way, but we're not crushed, because God is with us. We're perplexed, but not in despair, because God is with us. We're persecuted, but we're not abandoned, because God is with us. We're struck down, but not destroyed, because God is with us. Those who don't have God, they are crushed. They are in despair. They are abandoned. They are destroyed. But we, when we surrender our lives to Christ and follow after God, there's something special happens. And even though we're still weak vessels, we have this secret. And I'm going to share with you that secret in a minute. Verse 10, we always carry the death of Jesus in our body. We share in Christ's suffering in our lives as Christians. Why? And Paul says why. So that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. We share in his suffering because what comes out of that is his life comes out of that sharing. Verse 11, for we who live are always given over to death because of Jesus. Did you know that? What do we mean by that, and how does that apply to us? Well, Jesus actually says something in Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9, verse 23. Then he said to them all, if anyone wants to come with me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Jesus said to them all, if anybody wants to come with me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. A cross was a tool of execution. So willingly accept suffering and death as part of your walk with Christ. And Paul says the reason for it in verse 11, the last part, so that Jesus' life may also be revealed in our mortal flesh. Verse 16 says, therefore. That's a concluding statement. So Paul has been talking about, here we are as earthen vessels, we're weak. But we have this treasure that allows us to do things that we could normally not do. So therefore, we do not give up. It's easy to want to be tempted to give up. Oh, give up trying to be a Christian. It's too hard. You're not a real Christian. Just give it up. Stop. Stop trying to please God. Stop trying to do what's right. Stop trying to evade your temptation. Just stop. Just give it up. But we do not give up. Paul says, even though our outer person is being destroyed, even though a physical part of us goes through pain and suffering and emotional and spiritual distress, our inner person is being renewed day by day. Verse 17, for our momentary light affliction is producing for us an absolutely incomparable eternal weight of glory. So we do not focus on what is seen, but what is unseen. For what is seen, what we see around us is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And what is that unseen part? We can see that. We can see it. We can read about it. In Hebrews 12, I'm going to read that in a second. I got a call yesterday from a lady I haven't talked to in more than 20 years. Her name is Becky Bennett, and she was the wife of the pastor that my dad, a pastor of the church my dad attended when I was a kid. Her husband's name is Calvin. Calvin and Becky. Wonderful couple. I loved and still love Calvin and Becky Bennett. They would do things with young people. He taught me what it means to be a pastor. Between him and his father. His father, Calvin's dad, was also a preacher. It was his father and him that both talked about you know my philosophy on babies in church, right? I don't believe any preacher that they can't preach over crying babies is not worth his salt as a preacher. And that's where I got that from. And God, from loving people and self-sacrifice and living simply so you can have an impact on the lives around you. That's where I got all that. And I love them dearly. Well, Calvin and Becky, you know, planted this church in Arizona, then went on to do work with Native Americans for a number of years. And then, I don't know, about 10 years ago or so, Calvin was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And suddenly, the ministry stopped. He couldn't do it anymore. And Becky spent all her time taking care of him. And sometimes you wonder, you know, God, why? This couple was doing, you know, having such an impact for you, and in the last 10 years of his life, he couldn't do the work. He couldn't be a preacher. I don't know if you can comprehend what that is, what kind of shock that is. I believe I'm here on this earth primarily to bring people to Christ. And I believe every preacher believes that. And here Calvin lost it all. And his wife, and I was talking to Becky about that, about suffering so much. What is God? I asked her, what has the Lord taught you from that experience? And her answer was very simple. It's this here, right here. Hebrews 12, therefore, since we also have such a large cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily ensnares us. Let us run with endurance that race that lies before us, keeping our eyes on Jesus, the source and perfecter of our faith. Here it is. Who for the joy that lay before him endured a cross and despised the shame and has sat down at the right hand of God's throne. For the joy, Jesus saw the future. He knew what was going to happen. He saw the glory. And that joy that came from that expectation is what kept him going. For the joy he endured, he stuck with it. And so we, as humans, as frail humans, because he also was in a frail human body, with emotions. We're frail humans, and we go through difficult times in our lives. And sometimes many of us may get to a point where we know those difficult times aren't going to end. Well, they end when we take our last breath. But in those situations, in those dark times, we can find joy in knowing what's going to happen. That one day we're going to stand before the Lord and be there to give him praise, and the tears are going to be wiped away. No more sin, no more temptation, no more hate, no more suffering, no more pain. We are clay jars. I think the life that really best exemplifies this passage in 2 Corinthians that I've been talking about is Lori's life. Lori Yanez attended our church for a number of years. I first met her in 2013. And after she got saved, I always take a picture of people once when they first get saved, and I took a picture with them. And right as I was taking the picture, Lori leaned her head on my shoulder. And I didn't really know her that well. And so I was quite uncomfortable with that, this strange lady leaning her head on my shoulder. So I deleted the picture. And now I wish I hadn't. Because now that picture exemplifies our relationship. I came to know Lori and love her, and we're both, I really appreciate everything about her. But her life, just about her whole life, was not an easy life by any stretch of the imagination. She was born April 5th in 1961, the youngest of nine children. Her parents were divorced not long after, when she was still very young. So there was a lot of anger and animosity and kids being shuffled back and forth between parents. And the last few kids were certainly given the brunt of the anger and dismissal. Parents didn't give either any of them much attention, and she was given the least amount of attention. And she remembers a young little girl overhearing her older siblings talk one Christmas Eve or Christmas Day on how the last three should have never been born. Now, Lori was very intelligent, even as a child, and grades came easy. So she always got straight A's about normally. Didn't seem to make her life much easier. A teacher one day handed her a paper that had an A+ written on it, and then commented to the class on how she's lucky that she's got smarts, because she's going to need that when she gets older, inferring that she's never going to find a husband or anything like that. And the rest, she's for the rest of her life, she could still hear the kids laugh at that. She tried impressing her parents and getting them to notice with their grades, but they never paid attention. Even at times when her grade was slipped from an A to a C, nothing, never even noticed. She remembers one day after she hit puberty, she began gaining weight. And she's a young teenager. She's in the kitchen one night making lunches for her and her siblings. And she's got the music going, which I can imagine Lori doing. And she's dancing. And her dad walks in with his lip curled in disdain. He tells her how ugly she is and disgusting, and how she needs to learn to push away from the table once in a while. By the time she was 16, she'd had enough. She felt like, hey, no one cares about me. I'm just going to quit school, drop out of school, and run away from home, which she did. And she successfully, very quickly, got a job and an apartment. And so she had her own place, and after a while, she finally calls her parents and tells them where she is, and they come to her, and she's happy to see that. Oh, they care enough to come to me. But during the discussion, the mom talks about how she can't support Lori anymore And your dad never wanted you anyways. And part of her hoped her dad would speak up and argue that point. But instead, he walked out of the room and left. And her mom quickly followed. And Lori sat there in her apartment, alone, unloved, and unwanted. That's the life that Lori started out with. Fast forward about 20 years. Lori, still having health problems, rather large still, morbidly obese still, meets a guy named Gabe, and Gabe loves her. And so she's found this man that loves her. They got married, and every night before they go to sleep, he'd tell her good night, precious. And they had this wonderful marriage for you, and had Evan. So they had a baby, and life was so good and everything. But about 15 years into their marriage. Oh, let me back up. I'm getting ahead of myself. Life was a lot better. She continued to have health problems. Eventually relegated to a wheelchair because of the back pain from the weight and everything. And then an intelligent doctor finally got something right in her care and figured out she had a thyroid problem and started giving her medication, and she ended up losing about 100 pounds. And things seemed to be going really well. Unfortunately, damage to her back was already done, but at least they were figuring out the weight and things were going better. Then about 15 years into the marriage, Gabe was outside. They had just gotten home, and he had an asthma attack, and he died. It was around Christmas time, and because it was near Christmas time, none of her siblings cared enough to come for the funeral, because that would mess up their Christmas plans. Once again, Lori was alone. At least she had her son, right? But they struggled because of the way Gabe had things set up. I don't think he meant to. I think he tried to take care of her, but didn't have things quite lined up properly. And she ended up with nothing. And for a while, her and Evan were living in a shed. And she went to a couple of churches, including a church that Evan went to as a young, to the youth things. And she tried to get help, solicit help, and they wouldn't help her. She went to another church, and the church gave her a little bit of food, but then that was it. And then her son, it got worse. A new doctor stopped paying attention to her thyroid numbers and didn't adjust her medicine like he should have, and she started gaining all her weight back, and her back got worse. And her son started getting involved in drugs. And was stealing everything he could from her to pay for the drugs. And then I met Lori. 2013, I was delivering Meals on Wheels, delivered a meal to her, got to know her. We started helping her. She was suspicious about us at first. No other church had offered to help like we wanted to. What was different about us? What was going on with that? She thought I had some kind of angle. but I didn't. Fujar began helping her and got her, when we first met her, the place she was in, this one single wide trailer, the worst roach infestation I had ever seen. Bugs in the middle of the day were just dropping from the ceiling or everywhere, and there was no power going to the units, and it was August. So it was like an oven. And here she is just sweating and suffering and could hardly move around. She was in bad physical shape. Began to help her. And she came to church. And one Sunday in December 2013, she was in the back of the church and she was crying at the service. And I went back to her and was consoling her, and Missy came over to console her, and she's like, I don't know why I'm crying. And I thought, well, you know, you lost your husband. You're still dealing with the grief of that. Your son's in jail and everything you've been going through. But I was wrong as to the reason she was crying. And see, a little while later, after Missy dropped her off, Lori sent me a text saying, Pastor, come see me. And so I went to see her, and I sat down with her and was talking with her. And we got on to my personal testimony, what God did for me to change my life. And so I shared that with her, and to bring across the idea that this is for real. This is legit. I'm being serious about this. I said, look, this isn't just some dogma I'm sharing with you. This is for real. I'm not even getting paid for this. This isn't my job. And then Lori looked at me and asked me how she can be saved. And we talked for a bit about that, and we prayed together, and she gave her heart to the Lord. And we both cried and praised God. And then she opened up her laptop. Before I'd gotten there, she had written a letter to God. And in that letter, she talked about what she was feeling. And what she was feeling was remorse for sin. She was feeling guilt. You see, she was crying because she was under conviction. She had never felt conviction before. And she didn't know what it was. And then she talked about, you know, her despair of life and how she thought about committing suicide. And she wrote a letter. Who would care if I took all these pills by my bed? The pastor might care. But he's just doing his job, isn't he? And then she wrote, is it for real or is he just doing his job? And God used me to tell her it is for real, and I'm not just doing my job. And then we both cried and praised God again. And then she looked at me, he's really real, isn't he? I said, yes, Lori, he is. And that began Lori's walk with the Lord. Now, I'd like to say that she lived happily ever after from that point. No more suffering, no more challenges. But that wasn't the case. As a Christ follower, her heart was changed, but her body was still suffering, and her son was still battling drug addiction. And she was still dealing with financial struggles, trying to make ends meet with a little bit of disability money she was getting from the government. But years later, she wrote down some lessons she learned in her walk with God, with all the suffering, all the time she was bedridden for weeks at a time and could hardly go past much going to the bathroom. And she was alone often by herself. There was a period of time where she kind of, and she admitted that later, she kind of cut off contact with everybody. And the devil would use that, saying, oh, see, no one cares about you. Even though she was the one that cut everybody off. many dark nights. Then she would do everything she can to be a blessing. Young people, she had young people come to her, staying with her, being fed by her as much as she could. She would love on young people and try to teach them the love of Christ. Here's what she learned. She said she learned how to cope with pain, both physical, emotional, and spiritual. How to get through that, how to trust in God, how to not let it overcome you. She learned how to fight those, as she calls it, evil whispers. Those whispers in the night. You're not good enough for God. God doesn't care about you. Other people don't care about you. You're on your own. They don't want to be with you. You're too ugly. The same phrases from her family would be repeated in her head later on. And finally, she learned gratitude. She learned to appreciate the smallest things in life, the smallest blessings in life. That's what she thought she got out of 5 years. You see, 5 years to the day, 5 years from when I baptized her, I was preaching her funeral. So 5 years and a few months, she was a Christ follower. I like to think, well, I know this. Here's what we know from Lori's story, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Lori was pressured every way, but she wasn't crushed. She was perplexed, but she was not in despair. She was persecuted, but she was not abandoned. She was struck down, but not destroyed. She carried the death of Jesus in her body so the life of Jesus may be revealed in her body. Therefore, she did not give up. Even though her outer person was being destroyed, her inner person was being renewed day by day. And for her momentary light affliction, it produced in her and for her an absolutely incomparable eternal weight of glory. So Lori did not focus on what she could see. She focused on what she could not see. For what she could see, she knew to be temporary. But what she could not see, she knew to be eternal. And I like to think that as she slipped into eternity, as she left this mortal coil, she went through a transition. She at first could hear Missy and I standing by her bed singing to her. Then that began to dissipate. And she began to hear much better voices singing, "Holy, holy, holy. Holy God." And Lori was able to join them, feeling no pain anymore. No suffering anymore, crying out to God, "Holy, holy, holy." And what was unseen became what she could see because she held on. And though she was an earthen vessel broken, she held on to that treasure, that hope that God has given her. And God, what God did for her, God does for each and every one of us. And no matter what goes through our lives, whether it's injured knees or loss of jobs or trouble in marriage or financial problems or family members are being cruel, or friends are failing you and deserting you, and you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or next week. You don't know where your next meal is coming from. We know that God has a promise for us, and we can hold on to that. So no matter what happens to us, we can be secure in His peace and His love. Praise the Lord. Let's stand.
Thank you for joining us. If you liked this podcast, then hit the subscribe button. Also, take some time to rate us. Feel free to check out our website at servantsheartchapel.org, and you can email us at servantsheartchapel@gmail.com. Thanks again, and have a blessed week.